is my old friend. I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its scenes while I was sleeping. Planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone. Turn my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence.
Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's Perspectives on America. You know, there's been times over the last number of years that I've altered the title of this program on this network and other networks. Life, liberty, and all that jazz. Edge of Darkness, which actually is an old Errol Flynn movie from the 1940s. I've always got a way to intertwine the film stuff into my work. Every one of my websites has got some way of tying in the name of a film I look at Federal Observer, you begin to scroll down from the top, and the first one is an image of Arnold Schwarzenegger in a film called End of Days. I'm telling you something, if you ever have a chance to see that film, it is phenomenal. It's not the kind of piece that they tend to rerun. Very, very spiritual in its involvement. You scroll down further, you got a category called Point Blank. In it, I've got an image of Lee Marvin pointing a gun because it makes a statement. You scroll down even further. Poster of Robert Mitchum and Jane Greer from a film in the 1940s called Out of the Past. Each one of these serves a specific purpose. Another category called Sunset Boulevard. And usually when I post anything, you know, if you get into Sunset Boulevard, the category on Federal Observer, you probably won't find a lot of publications in there. But each and every one of them is somehow tied to film. Old Hollywood film. We go to Sierra Madre Precious Metal. Oh, Sierra Madre, that's a Bogart film, right? Yeah? Yeah? Sure. Treasure of Sierra Madre. Oh, and when you go there, you scroll over on the right-hand side, and there's a painting of Humphrey Bogart in the Spanish movie poster from Le Tresor de la Sierra Madre. And you scroll down. Out of the Past again. Out of the Past contains archive pieces that were published many years ago by either myself or some other people. Well, we go over to drkelly.net. Now, obviously, I ain't doing a lot of that kind of stuff over there, but son of a gun, no film reference on drkelly.net. Wait a minute, let me see. Yeah, Out of the Past, the archive edition. There's that Mitchum movie again. And finally, when you get to Metropolis, and we're going to be talking about Metropolis a bit today. Yeah. Metropolis itself is the name of an old 1927 German silent movie. Oh, and we've got that Out of the Past category again. Archives. And, of course, Village of the Damned. Was that named after a movie? Well, yeah, but it really made more reference to Hillary Clinton talking about, you know, the Village of the Kids and all this nonsense. Why do I share all that stuff with you? I have absolutely no clue. But I guess the consideration that I have to give, the question that I have to ask, given all that we spoke of the first hour tonight, but I look back at so much that we've spoken of in this first 3 months of this year with our direction on the programming, which, to be honest, in so many respects is continuations of similar programming. I mean, the one you listened to yesterday was recorded in 2019. What is that, 6 years ago or thereabouts, something like that? And what was the title of yesterday's program? Do you remember? Sounds like the mic is getting funky. I noticed that when we connected. Why don't you throw a little dance of Kim on and let's reconnect again. Okay, that cool?
Yeah.
Get some Kim on.
Right back.
Gotta do it again. Michael says my music's getting a little, my mic's getting a little funky. What the heck? Maybe I'm just getting funky. Question I posted just before we had to do a reconnect. Title of yesterday's program. This is the one I recorded back in October 18th of 2019. I was filling in for Stattmiller. The title was So Tired of America. No, I'm tired of what America's become, what we the people have sat back and allowed it to become in so many respects, my friends. So the question is, has America run out of time? Because I believe that life as we have known it will never be the same again. For those that love America, these are very trying times. We have watched our beloved country go steadily downhill for decades. And in the recent years, that process has greatly accelerated. And yet now we've reached a point where our entire culture is absolutely saturated with evil. Large media corporations who make billions of dollars exporting that culture to the rest of the world. But in the end, we will truly reap what we have sown. If our nation had chosen to reverse course, things could have worked out much differently. But it's not happened. Oh yes, my friends, there are individuals, and some of you are out there right now. And there are small groups that have chosen to change direction, but the nation as a whole just continues to run the wrong direction as fast as it possibly can. And what we're going to do, attempt to do in this short period of time is share some numbers with you that are just staggering. We've been given opportunity after opportunity to choose a different direction. We just keep making the wrong choices, the same damn mistakes. But we're going to reach a point where we're going to be out of opportunities. In fact, could it be possible that America has already run out of time? In June of 2022, the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. That was an opportunity for our nation to go in a new direction. But that's not what happened. Instead, the number of abortions during the 12 months immediately following the Roe v. Wade decision was actually higher than the number of abortions during the 12 months immediately preceding that ruling. And now a new report from the Guttmacher Institute is telling us that the abortion rate in 2023 was the highest rate that it had been since 2014. Abortions had reached their highest level in 10 years, despite bans on the procedure in more than a dozen states. A report released recently by Reproductive Health from Guttmacher Institute showed that there were 1 million abortions in the U.S. in 2023, the equivalent of 16 per every 1,000 women. And that was up 10% from the 14.4 per 1,000 in 2020, and the highest since 2014, when the rate then was 14.6 per 1,000. And as for the total number of abortions, we've not seen a million in a single year since 2012. Because today, most abortions are done by taking pills. Gee, makes me want to go back to Brandy Clark. You take a little pill. But that same Guttmacher Institute report says that a whopping 63% of all U.S. abortions were conducted in that manner last year. And the report also found that 63% of abortions performed in 2023 were from medications such as the two-pill regimen of Mifepristone and Misoprostol. In 2000, no abortions were done with that method. It's become easier for women in the United States to get these pills. In fact, it's being reported that abortion pill Mifepristone hit the shelves at CVS and Walgreens for the first time this month. And so the number of abortions performed by taking pills is expected to go even higher during the years ahead. Of course, many of the celebrities that our young people follow militantly promote reproductive freedom. For example, Plan B pills and condoms were given out for free at Olivia Rodrigo's recent concert in St. Louis. What? You got somebody putting on a live concert and they're giving out free reproductive freedom pills? You've got to be kidding my you-know-what. Unbelievable. Simply unbelievable. You know, our daughter produced three girls out of wedlock. Never once did she consider abortion. What she did produced three amazing young girls. The problem is the second daughter was put up for adoption at birth. We'd already met the people. We knew we were going to adopt. We're actually very close with that family, with our missing granddaughter, as it were, who will be graduating from college in Texas. Oh, they live in Arizona. But she'll be graduating this spring. The crazy thing is she apparently is going to go to work with her father, her adopted father. The first granddaughter is probably the love of my life in so many respects. Graduated from ASU almost two years ago with three. I can't even think of the term. I've said it on the air before. She's teaching. She's married. They got married by a judge. But we're going out there in Illinois in June for their church wedding. And, of course, then there's my Kylie, who just turned 20 last week. 5 days ago. 18, 19, 22, 4 days ago, 5 days ago. The interesting thing is, granddaughter one and granddaughter number three, that would be Taylor and Kylie. My wife and I have had those children in our home, in our lives, for over half their lives. The mother was never a mother. she just took care of herself. Which makes one wonder if maybe my wife shouldn't have had an abortion. But then you see, if that had happened, we wouldn't have had these three amazing children, grandchildren. But we go back and look at this Olivia Rodrigo concert. Missouri Abortion Fund distributed the morning after pill and condoms to concert goers during Rodrigo's Guts tour last Tuesday night in St. Louis, part of the Pop Store's Fund for Good initiative focused on building an equitable and just future for all women, girls, and people seeking reproductive health freedom. Now, Rodrigo's 21, not been shy about her support for reproductive rights throughout her career. Fund for Good, launched in conjunction with the Guts Tour in February, had announced Rodrigo's commitment to partnering with local chapters of the National Network of Abortion Funds throughout the tour, and is ensuring that a percentage of proceeds will go to reproductive rights organizations. It's brutal out here in Missouri, but we are here for abortion access, the Abortion Fund tweeted following the concert. My friends, whether we like it or not, this is our society today. And yet the proportion of the population that identifies as LGBTQ+ just continues to grow. From NBC News, the percentage of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer adults in the U.S. continues to increase, reaching an all-time high of 7.6% in 2023. That according to a new Gallup poll. Broken down by gender, the survey of 12,000 people 18 and older across the country found that women were twice as likely as men to identify as LGBTQ. Almost 30% of Gen X women identify as LGBTQ+, most as bisexual. That according to Jeffrey Jones, a senior editor at Gallup, who said that's where a lot of the growth seems to be happening. People, just think about these numbers for a minute. Young adults are the future of this country. And now almost a third of all Gen X or Gen Z women identify as LGBTQ+. Those who wanted to fundamentally transform our culture have damn sure succeeded. Can you imagine what our founders would think if they could see us now? Last month, we read a story about a social media influencer known as Meow that identifies as a dog. An American woman identifies as a dog is given an insight into what her daily life looks like. The social media star, who is known as Meow, appeared on Kiss FM's Kyle and Jackie O show on Thursday to discuss what it means to have life as a canine. She told the hosts how she sleeps in a crate, is rewarded with dog treats, and has handlers who help to look after her. Meow live streams on gaming platform Twitch, explained how she identifies as a Dalmatian and will bark and run on all fours as she embraces life as a dog. I don't get it. This crap is actually going on? Why would you call yourself Meow if you identify as a dog? Maybe somebody out there can explain that to me. I mean, at this point, nobody can deny we're in the midst of a cultural tsunami. Once upon a time, most Americans embraced Christian values, but now a recent PU Research Center survey has discovered that 80% of U.S. adults believe that religion's role in America life is shrinking. Meanwhile, the vast majority of U.S. adults, 80%, said religion's role in American life is shrinking, a percentage that the highest it has been in Pew's research history. Just 18% expressed the belief that faith is gaining influence in American society. But I've shared some things with you. I've not been in church in a good number of years. In fact, I drove by last week, the last church I was in, with my wife, with some church-going religious folks that we're actually very close with. It was a Christmas celebration with a hard rock jazz, with a hard rock band playing music. And they had a drummer up behind a bunch of glass to kind of soften the drum music, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, what in the living hell has this got to do with Christianity? Oh, that's right. They were trying to draw young people in, which is fine. But what's wrong with the old-fashioned way? I was drawn in when I was in high school. Not that I hadn't been to church before, but Harry Lundell was a great minister. I was a member of the choir. Our choir director was from Northwestern University. Brought a whole bunch of his other fellow musicians down to join our choir and become a part of it. I still remember a good number of the people that I was in that choir with. Jan Smith, in particular. She was the banker's daughter. I've talked about her before. A banker didn't want her hanging around me because we were a depositor in his bank. We were low-life mofos, you know. Usual crap. God. Folks, there ain't any signs that any of this is going to change anytime too soon. All of this is just a matter of time before we reap what we have sown. How many times do we remind you the clock is ticking? Oh, the time is certainly flying here in 2024, baby. We've reached the end of winter. Spring has now begun. But start a little earlier than usual this year. Tuesday, March 19th, 11:06 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time would mark the vernal equinox for the Northern Hemisphere, when the sun is directly over the equator and its energy is in balance between the Northern and Southern Hemispheres, that according to the measure of the National Weather Service. All I can suggest to you is that every day is so damn precious, my friends. This nation has been going in the wrong direction for a very, very, very long time. How long will be too long? Sadly, I'm entirely convinced that it's already much later than most people think it is. Commentary with my side comments by Michael Snyder. Profound, profound stuff. We're going to go to a break. And we'll be back with our final commentary, which is going to be quite interesting unto itself. As I told you, we're going to be talking about the education system to some degree. So stay with us, won't you? Be right back.
Well, you can run and hide, but you just can't.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass fed and grass finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com.
Listening to the wind, trying to hear the voice of a distant friend, wishing you and I were close again. Listening to the wind, listening to the breeze as it whispers through the poplar trees. Do you think of me way back then? Do you listen to the wind? Listening to the night. Wishing we could hold and squeeze each other tight. I can almost hear the stars so bright. Listening to the night. Listening to the sound of a highway through some distant town. I can almost hear the pale moonlight. Do you listen to the night?
Merle Haggard. You know, the older he got, in so many respects, I believe, the better he got. But, you know, I guess a lot of them are that way. I do something I don't do very often. Partially because I published it, but partially because it's a subject matter that I don't touch on often enough, in my personal opinion. The problem is, I don't know the general age range of our listening audience. If they're a bunch of old so-and-sos like me, or if they're a lot younger, that are waking up and growing up and tuning in to learn the truth and reality of what's going on. I've had a problem with the public school system for a lot of years. I've shared this story with you more times than I need to. The year, as we speak, is 2024. My third week of my senior year in high school in 1965, I walked out. I didn't just walk out. I, in effect, quit. I saw what was going on back then. I wrote an intense article about it, which is published over the Dr. Kelly website. I don't remember what it was called. Maybe I entitled it Take a Little Pill. It's under my name. No big deal. You can find it. Under the headline, Without Apology. It's well worth listening to. Maybe we'll come up again next week in our health program, and I may share it with you again. Partially deals with health, but it also partially deals with the education system. Currently, more people seem to be waking up to the state of education in their institutions. Complaints of indoctrination in schools by both parents and teachers have increased in public debate in recent years, with various discussions relating to topics like critical race theory and gender ideology. Here we go again with this crap. In addition to political indoctrination, issues such as the drop in reading and math proficiency and policies of prolonged school closures during the lockdown, COVID lockdown crap, have also contributed to this dissatisfaction. And as alternatives, more states have passed policies that allow school choice, and the numbers of children educated through homeschooling grew by more than 60% between 2020 and 2022. And yet, today's appalling educational scenario is not unfathomable for libertarians, especially for economists and libertarian theorist Murray Rothbard. In Rothbard's book entitled For a New Liberty in Education, Free and Compulsory, the author showed us the true role of public education throughout history and how it's diverged from its stated objectives. And those books, together with other concepts for libertarian theory in the Austrian School of Economics, can be applied today, my friends, to guarantee true educational freedom, as we're going to attempt to discuss here, right now. But before we do it, I want to share a quote with you. It's been quite a while since I've shared this particular one. And unfortunately, I've lost track of the woman who gave this, because she was a friend of mine on Facebook. And we stayed in touch, and I continued to follow her work. She's a medical doctor. Her name is Rosemary Stein. Rosemary said, "The only way socialism has any chance in America for the education system to push it in schools. Remember," she said, "the father of their modern education elite beliefs was John Dewey. Dewey was a communist, a failed teacher who pushed what are now clearly failed education theories." And here's the quote of the day. The militant crowd is comprised of uninformed and misinformed people looking at themselves as unfortunate, underpaid, underappreciated victims of capitalism, overwhelmed with jealousy that there are people who are everything they are not. You are going to have to take ownership over the education of your children. Throughout the work of Murray Rothbard, he's shown how compulsory public education has always been used as a way of repressing dissident minorities, be they political, ethnic, religious. Religious leaders of the Protestant Reformation, such as Martin Luther and John Calvin, saw mandatory state education as a weapon of religious warfare against religions that did not follow their doctrines. And besides religious indoctrination, government-sponsored schooling was often used as a tool to create an obedient populace to the ruling state. And as pointed out by Rothbard, for the first advocates of state-sponsored education in America, such as Calvin Stowe, public schooling was supposed to be seen as a national security matter, and parents who did not enroll their children in such a system needed to be considered a threat to the public in a similar way to international spies or invaders. And so the connection between indoctrination for war and public education models could also be found in the Prussian school system and its consequences for Germany's participation in the First World War. Now, established during the early 19th century by then King Frederick William III and his Minister of Education, Karl von Stein, the Russian education system was a centralized educational complex of mandatory attendance with military aspirations aimed at national unity. And the militarism and strict discipline of the education system sought to build a national identity in which the public school was an army formed by the people, a perspective that helped to shape the bellicose desires during the First World War period. Now, the examples given by Rothbard show how historically education has been used as a tool to control what children and young people learn. That according to the ideologies that the state wanted to favor. If in the past the ideologies were religious or about building a national identity at the expense of the suppression of other dissident cultures, nationalities that coexisted in the same state, today, a new type of progressive religion is being taught in schools. Yes. In October of 2022, a survey by the Manhattan Institute showed how social justice theories were being exposed in American schools as absolute truths. And from the survey commissioned by the article's authors, Eric Kaufman and Zachary Goldberg, 80% of the students surveyed were taught at least one critical race theory concept in a high school classroom, and 54% were at least taught a concept belonging to gender ideology. But besides that, only 32% of students reported that opposing concepts were taught as being equally respectable, which indicate indoctrination rather than a mere exposition of different views about controversial topics. Do you begin to understand the comment that we made, I think, in the last hour, the importance of getting involved with and participating in your city council meetings and your school board meetings? How many grandparents out there or great-grandparents have been kind of forced to follow the same kind of situation my wife and I have, which took on the responsibility of raising our grandchildren. Why didn't you go to school board meetings? Why don't you go to city council meetings? All of these kind of developments make sense. A lot of this stuff could be cited as a direct consequence of the ideas that proponents of public education used to have. But since its inception with thinkers like Dewey, left-wing ideology has been viewed as admirable, and even Soviet-style education was praised. But moreover, given that education has historically served as a tool of the ruling elites, progressives are now the new ruling elite. And the logical conclusion is that progressivism is being taught in both public and heavily state-regulated private schools. In addition to the less than positive history of public education as an indoctrination project from the very beginning, it's also important to mention the theoretical contradictions and perverse incentives of a centralized state education from, maybe an Austro-libertarian framework. Firstly, by having to educate a large number of pupils and not knowing what kind of education each of them wants, government schooling is unable to take into account the different scales of value that each family and student has when it first comes to education. And yet, without market signals and private ownership of the means of production in the state system, it is not possible to make the most appropriate business decisions regarding what's valued by the general public. Therefore, as in most socialist experiments, there is the problem of economic calculation applied to education when it's in the hands of state agents. You see, according to libertarian theory, natural rights are constantly violated with the establishment of public schools that are supposedly free for the population in general. Firstly, since taxation is a coercive taxing by the state of resources derived from the productive labor of individuals, and since state schools are financed through taxes, through direct taxation or via inflation, it's not possible to claim that they are institutions that have been established voluntarily. My friends, in the current situation, people such as childless young adults, the elderly, parents who pay for private educational establishments for their children, are forced to pay for a system that they don't use. And what's more, they may also be funding the spread of ideologies they don't agree with. And with that, it is possible to see how education violates both property and human rights. But there are some things that can be done. With all these considerations about how state education is a bad idea in historical, ideological, economic, and natural rights grounds, many folks have asked themselves about possible solutions to guarantee more educational freedom. Two such solutions can be described between the dichotomy of reform and abolition, present in so many current libertarian debates. Economist Milt Friedman once promoted educational vouchers to reduce the bureaucracy of a state-controlled education system. And according to that policy, called school choice, by the way, by its advocates, public funding for education would still exist, but instead of the resources paying for all the school structure bureaucracy, the money would be deposited. It would be deposited. And I just lost track of where I was. I hit the button and popped myself. Isn't that exciting? The money would be deposited for each student who could use it in private schools. Despite being a very popular measure among conservatives and libertarians, the use of vouchers also has problems. First, the infringement on property rights would still be present under a voucher system, since government funding through coercive taxation would not be abolished, just transferred from public to private schools. And moreover, even with parents being able to decide where their children go to school, government agents would have to determine which schools would be considered for the program and which ones would not. These decisions might bring incentives to increase governmental oversight and regulation to private educational institutions, given that the voucher system would or should bring more public funds to the private system, and could also raise tuition prices in private education. But the other proposition offers alternatives that aim for the complete abolition of any interference in education. Just as there was a separation of religion and state in the past to prevent state interference in the way individuals practice their religion, a complete separation of education and state is needed. The abolition must occur in all levels, from kindergarten through 12th grade schools to universities, so that the intellectual formation of individuals is not subject to the ideological interest of the ruling class. But to that end, it would be necessary to call for a major reduction in the regulations imposed on private educational institutions, a complete privatization of public institutions, and an end to any existing subsidies for the education system. We can give you more examples, briefly. Concrete examples of measures to take include maximum decentralization of the school system, with decisions being made at the local level, incentives for alternatives to traditional formal education, with an increasing rejection of the current system by more and more families. And that is happening, given the growth in the number of students in homeschooling initiatives, and with the creation of new private institutions, different approaches to education. Students must be given more choice. After understanding the problems of our education, the libertarians should not just aim for small reforms, but should be willing to fight to dismantle the current system entirely. It's got to be done. But it may be too late. We're back to our commentary that we just shared with you from Michael Snyder a short while ago. It's unbelievable, people. Absolutely unbelievable. Has America run out of time? I don't think life as we've known it will ever be the same again. I'm in a strange frame of mind tonight, my friends, as I'm sure you've been able to determine. It's very tough. Thanks, man. Just about time for us to bail out. Coming up like right now, or a minute from now, or what? There it is. I thank you for the patience with me tonight. Time for me to go do what George Michael sings about. It's time for Pray for Time. My friends, we may be running out. I'll see you next week. God bless. Good night. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
These are the days of the open hand. We will not be the last. Look around now. These are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. Hand in hand with the ignorance and legitimate excuses,
the rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure if we have it too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak of. Dead skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year. Yeah, this is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I'll be held too much, but I'll take all my chances, say. I sang it 20 years and a day, there's nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love, Jesus, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope, there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
I'm Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.